Thankfully, I didn't say it aloud. That's not going to win me any points in the arena. What I do say is, it's just, if we didn't win, I wanted Thresh to because he let me go and because of Rue.
Yeah, I know, says Peeta. But this means we're one step closer to District 12.
He nudges a plate of food into my hands. Eat, it's still warm. I take a bite of the stew to show I don't really care, but it's like glue in my mouth and takes a lot of effort to swallow. It also means Kato will be back hunting us.
And he's got supplies again, says Peeta.
He'll be wounded, I bet, I say.
What makes you say that? Peeta asks.
Because Thresh would have never gone down without a fight. He's so strong, I mean he was, and they were in his territory, I say.
Good, says Peeta. The more wounded Kato is, the better. I wonder how Foxface is making out.
Oh, she's fine, I say peevishly. I'm still angry she thought of hiding in the cornucopia and I didn't. Probably be easier to catch Kato than her.
Maybe they'll catch each other and we can just go home, says Peeta. But we better be extra careful about the watches. I dozed off a few times.
Me too, I admit. But not tonight. We finish our food in silence, and then Peeta offers to take the first watch. I burrow down in the sleeping bag, next to him, pulling my hood up over my face to hide it from the cameras. I just need a few moments of privacy where I can let any emotion cross my face without being seen. Under the hood, I silently say goodbye to Thresh and thank him for my life. I promise to remember him, and if I can, do something to help his family and Ruse if I win. Then I escape into sleep, comforted by a full belly and the steady warmth of Peeta beside me. When Peeta wakes me later, the first thing I register is the smell of goat cheese. He's holding out half a roll spread with the creamy white stuff and topped with apple slices.
Don't be mad, he says. I had to eat again. Here's your half.
Oh, good, I say, immediately taking a huge bite. The strong, fatty cheese tastes just like the kind Prim makes. The apples are sweet and crunchy. Mmm.
We make a goat cheese and apple tart at the bakery, he says.
Bet that's expensive, I say.
Too expensive for my family to eat, unless it's gone very stale. Of course, practically everything we eat is stale, says Peeta, pulling the sleeping bag up around him.
In less than a minute, he's snoring. Huh. I always assume the shopkeepers live a soft life. And it's true, Peeta has always had enough to eat. But there's something kind of depressing about living your life on stale bread, the hard, dry loaves that no one else wanted. One thing about us, since I bring our food home on a daily basis, most of it is so fresh, you have to make sure it isn't going to make a run for it. Somewhere during my shift, the rain stops. Not gradually, but all at once. The downpour ends, and there's only the residual drippings of water from branches, the rush of the now overflowing stream below us. A full, beautiful moon emerges, and even without the glasses, I can see outside. I can't decide if the moon is real or merely a projection of the game makers. I know it was full shortly before I left home. Gail and I watched it rise as we hunted into the late hours. How long have I been gone? I'm guessing it's been about 2 weeks in the arena, and there was that week of preparation in the capital. Maybe the moon has completed its cycle. For some reason, I badly want it to be my moon. The same one I see from the woods around District 12. That would give me something to cling to in the surreal world of the arena, where the authenticity of everything is to be doubted. 4 of us left. For the first time, I allow myself to truly think about the possibility that I might make it home. To fame. To wealth. To my own house in the Victor's Village. My mother and Prim would live there with me. No more fear of hunger. A new kind of freedom. But then, what? What would my life be like on a daily basis? Most of it has been consumed with the acquisition of food, Take that away, and I'm not really sure who I am, what my identity is. The idea scares me some. I think of Haymitch, with all his money. What did his life become? He lives alone, no wife or children, most of his waking hours, drunk. I don't want to end up like that. But you won't be alone, I whisper to myself. I have my mother and Prim. Well, for the time being. And then, I don't want to think about then, when Prim has grown up, my mother passed away. I know I'll never marry, never risk bringing a child into the world. Because if there's one thing being a victor doesn't guarantee, it's your children's safety. My kids' names would go right into the reaping balls with everyone else's. And I swear I'll never let that happen. The sun eventually rises, its light slipping through the cracks and illuminating Peeta's face. Who will he transform into if we make it home? This perplexing, good-natured boy who can spin out lies so convincingly the whole of Pan Am believes him to be hopelessly in love with me. And I'll admit it, there are moments when he makes me believe it myself. At least we'll be friends, I think. Nothing will change the fact that we've saved each other's lives in here. And beyond that, he will always be the boy with the bread. Good friends. Anything beyond that, though. And I feel Gail's gray eyes watching me, watching Peeta all the way from District 12. Discomfort causes me to move. I scoot over and shake Peeta's shoulder. His eyes open sleepily, and when they focus on me, he pulls me down for a long kiss. We're wasting hunting time, I say, when I finally break away.
I wouldn't call it wasting, he says, giving a big stretch as he sits up. So, do we hunt on empty stomachs to give us an edge?
Not us, I say. We stuff ourselves to give us staying power.
Count me in, Peeta says.
But I can see he's surprised when I divide the rest of the stew and rice and hand a heaping plate to him.
All this?
We'll earn it back today, I say, and we both plow into our plates. Even cold, it's one of the best things I've ever tasted. I abandon my fork and scrape up the last dabs of gravy with my finger. I can feel Effie Trinket shuddering at my manners.
Hey, Effie, watch this, says Peeta.
He tosses his fork over his shoulder and literally licks his plate clean with his tongue, making loud, satisfied sounds. And he blows a kiss out to her in general and calls,
We miss you, Effie!
I cover his mouth with my hand, but I'm laughing. Stop! Cato could be right outside our cave. He grabs my hand away.
What do I care? I've got you to protect me now, says Peeta, pulling me to him.
Come on, I say in exasperation, extricating myself from his grasp, but not before he gets in another kiss. Once we're packed up and standing outside our cave, our mood shifts to serious. It's as though for the last few days, sheltered by the rocks and the rain and Cato's preoccupation with Thresh, we were given a respite, a holiday of sorts. Now, although the day is sunny and warm, we both sense we're really back in the games. I hand Peeta my knife, since whatever weapons he once had are long gone, and he slips it into his belt. My last 7 arrows, of the 12 I sacrificed 3 in the explosion, 2 at the feast, rattle a bit too loosely in the quiver. I can't afford to lose any more.
He'll be hunting us by now, says Peeta. Cato isn't one to wait for his prey to wander by.
If he's wounded, I begin.
It won't matter, Peeta breaks in. If he can move, he's coming.
With all the rain, the stream has overrun its banks by several feet on either side. We stop there to replenish our water. I check the snares I set days ago and come up empty. Not surprising with the weather. Besides, I haven't seen many animals or signs of them in this area. If we want food, we better head back up to my old hunting grounds, I say.
Your call. Just tell me what you need me to do,
Peeta says. Keep an eye out, I say. Stay on the rocks as much as possible, no sense in leaving him tracks to follow, and listen for both of us. It's clear at this point that the explosion destroyed the hearing in my left ear for good.